And we are finally live. We apologize for the little delay we had here. We have been dealing with some technical issue for the past like almost hour, really, trying to get the StreamYard stream going. We are now doing it for me, two computers at the same time is required to do the stream, guys. So we're going out while Seth is also having some technical issue. But if everything is right now, you should be able to hear Seth. You there, Seth? Yeah. Yeah. Let him know in the chat if you can hear him. But StreamYard was having some issue communicating his audio stream to me for whatever reason it was. But now we should be fine. So let's start with this week's biggest news in the EV world, in the Tesla world in particular, and as it has been the case in the past few weeks, the hype train for the Cybertruck is still going full speed. So we still have some interesting news on that from this week, but just we're going to do just one, because at this point, a lot of the Cybertruck news is like the prototype signings and everything, which are very exciting because we want to see that truck. But in terms of new information, this week was a little bit slower until today, where we uncovered a CARB filing that was very interesting. Very misunderstood by a lot of people. Now I've seen a lot of publications saying, it means that the Cybertruck is going to weigh 10,000 pounds and whatnot. All right. So what this new CARB filing is about is Tesla really trying to communicate to the California Air Resources Board, also known as CARB, that what they think of their advanced clean truck rules that are coming up as part of their plan to their clean air plan. And the of course, they see it as not aggressive enough, like they did for the ZEV mandate for years now. But what was interesting about the Cybertruck in that filing is that Tesla mentioned that they have a strong initiative right now to a strong trucks program that are going to contribute to California, the CARB's effort to electrify the Californian truck fleet. That includes the Tesla Semi that we've known about for years. And now they also mentioned the Cybertruck. And in that, in the advanced truck rules that the CARB is advancing, is for medium duty and EV duty trucks. So of course the Tesla Semi as a class 8 truck, a semi truck, it fits in the EV duty, but in the medium duty, it includes some pickup trucks, but not all pickup trucks. The class 1 and class 2A pickup trucks, like the F-150, for example, are not included. But Tesla argues that the Cybertruck will fit the requirement for a medium truck, medium duty truck, as a class B truck. And the classification for a class B is that it has a gross vehicle weight rating of 8,500 to 10,000 pounds. So for those people not familiar, the gross vehicle weighting is not the gross weight of the car, it's the vehicle, whatever it is. It's the weight of the vehicle plus any passenger or any cargo or payload that it can have, exempt of a trailer payload. So we don't include the 14,000 pounds towing capacity of the truck. We are just talking about the truck itself plus a payload on the truck itself, not being towed by the truck. And in that case, for the Tesla Cybertruck, apparently it's 3,500 pounds for any kind of version of the truck, which I thought was kind of weird when Tesla first announced that. Like the tri-motor or the dual motor don't have more payload capacity than the regular one. But that has also a lot to do with the chassis of the truck itself. It's not necessarily have to do with the powertrain. So the chassis is able to support that. So that's why they're doing that. By the way, are we still good, Seth? Because I didn't see any comment about your... Yeah? All right. So yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we've been a bit delayed on that, but we'll go to it for sure. So coming back to this medium duty truck. So a lot of people were surprised by that, because there was like, all right, so why was Tesla comparing the truck to the F-150 if it's not in the same category as the F-150? And then we should be comparing to F-250 or the GMC 2500 or even the Titan XD from Nissan. So what's happening here is that some confusion that it's more about, yes, it is technically classified as a medium duty truck, but it's because it's the size and weight of a light duty truck or a class 2B with the capacity of a payload or at least close to one of a medium truck, which puts it in a medium truck because the classification goes with gross vehicle weight rating. So in short, it's not unfair to compare it to the F-150 because it's probably around the same actual weight as the F-150. And we don't know exactly for sure because Tesla hasn't disclosed the weight. But what this filing did tell us is that if Tesla says that all its vehicles are going to classify as a medium truck, and medium truck are 8,500 pounds to 10,000 pounds, and the Cybertruck has a payload capacity of 3,500 pounds, it means that the Tesla Cybertruck should weigh between 5,000 and 6,500 pounds, which is closer to most class 2A, which is a light duty truck, than a class 2B. So it's just because they do have, it's like they do have too much payload capacity for a normal light duty truck. Oh yeah, okay, so apparently you cannot hear Seth. I'm the only one who can hear Seth right now. All right, so not ideal. We apologize for that. Seth's gonna try to find a solution on his side and then we come back to it. But in the meantime, let me just move on with those news. So yeah, what it tells us here is like it's just basically some insight into the weight of the Cybertruck, which was a big question because of the steel structure, steel body that the Tesla is going with instead of the usual body on frame technique. Other than that, you could also make the argument that it's sort of in between light duty and medium duty, so it could like steal customer from both market, but that's going to be a harder argument to make, in my opinion. All right. Next news came out also today that happened last night. Basically, Tesla updated the online design studio for the Model 3 with a price increase on the two lower-end version of, well, lower-end, the two least expensive version of the Model 3, the Standard Range Plus rear-wheel drive and the long-range dual motor. They both saw an increase of $500. So not a massive price increase, just a slight price increase. But it's interesting in the context that that's in the US, of course. We're talking about now $39,990, so basically $40,000 for the Standard Range Plus, and $48,900, so $49,000 for the little test set. All right, and if you can hear it, let them know. So yeah, it's interesting in the context of the federal tax credit moving away, because Tesla is doing that just now, 2-3 weeks ahead of the tax credit going away. But that's for new orders, and we don't expect any new orders being placed now to be delivered by the end of the year, which is the cutoff period for the federal tax credit for Tesla. Starting any delivery starting January 1st, 2020, in the US, Tesla buyers will not have access to the federal tax credit, even only the $1,800 that was offered for the last, was it 3 months or 6 months or whatever it was. And so, there was some speculation that Tesla might try to adjust their pricing down to compensate for that, but instead they are going up, as we see right now, not by as much, by 500. But what it means is that now ordering a car from Tesla, especially those two cars, which I would have to assume are the two most popular version of the Model 3, which in turn is Tesla's most popular car, they are willing to make it $2,300 more expensive to order right now. Well, if you take delivery by the end, if you take delivery next year. So I'm not sure what it shows exactly. Does it shows that Tesla is confident that they do going to have enough demand for the Model 3 in the US next year without the federal tax credit? Or does it just mean that they will not rely on the I just heard you in double right now. Sorry.
You can hear me now?
Well, I think
all so. Right. I guess it works now. I'm on a different mic.
Okay.
So I'm going to kill the Skype.
Okay. All right. Just give us a second, guys.
All right. How are we doing now? While we're adjusting, I'm not sure if you heard before, but we're sponsored this week by EV Items. We'll talk to you more about it later, but go to evitems.com and get a bunch of electric vehicle accessories and 20% off with code ELECTREC. We'll talk a little bit later about that. How are we doing, Fred?
All right, now I can hear you through with all the Skype here. All right. Very sorry about that, people. It's not our best episode so far.
No.
We've been having some technical issues that have been plaguing us for the past hours. But yeah, I was talking, said this. What do you think of this price increase? Because does it show that Tesla is confident about the US market next year without the federal tax credit? Or do you think it's just because they won't really rely on the US market next year with expansions in Europe and expansion in China?
I mean, they can't just ignore the US market for sure. So, I don't know. It's a good question. There's not a lot of rhyme or reason to Tesla's, or at least externally to Tesla's, pricing changes. For a while there, they seemed like just crazy haphazard. Mm-hmm. But they've been more stable lately. I don't know. I mean, the tax credit now.
Sorry to interrupt you, but more so, like in the last month, really, both those cars, the dual motor increased by $1,000.
Right.
So that's a significant increase, really, because it's 2x500 for the rear-wheel drive one, though that's fair because it was 500 for just 500 for the past few months, so that's not too bad.
But as far as like you can't just ignore the U.S. market. I don't think that's part of Tesla's plan at all. I don't know. The tax credit's only $1,875 right now, so, mm-hmm. and they seem to be selling okay. So I don't know. I don't think Tesla has to worry too much, since they've done pretty well with a little tax credit, mm-hmm. Although tax credits do help. I don't know. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me. But
and there are still efforts to change the whole structure of the tax credit to I think that the more serious amount right now is to extend, because the whole having a cap on it makes no sense. Every automaker should have access to it for a certain period of time. I don't like this cap thing because it discourage the people who make the most EV, which is it's the contrary to what you want to do. But right now, the most serious one is extending it from 200,000 cap to 600,000 cap. A few Democrats are pushing for that. I'm not sure what are the chances to happen. I think in the US, like you're going to be more aware and less than me. At the end of the year, normally the Congress does a push to try to get some legislation passed before the next session, right?
It does feel like that. I don't think this Congress is going to do it, especially the Republicans-led Senate. The Senate right now is kind of just a mess, and obviously you got the whole impeachment's coming up, so I don't think a lot's going to get done.
All right,
which is very unfortunate.
Yeah, let's not put our hope on the change on the of the law on that front right now. But yeah, I think it's interesting. Maybe because. What I think is going to happen, I feel very confident that unless there's some significant logistical issues, Tesla is going to sell all its inventory cars in the US by the end of the quarter. So I think Tesla is going to have an awesome quarter in the US right now. And when they do that, when they have a big influx of cars in the market, it's always good for demand because Tesla is a big word of mouth company. And if you just put more cars in the hands of customers, those customers generally are good at selling a few of those cars more to their neighborhood. Like the whole adage of like your neighbor gets a new car, you can check it out. Oh, maybe I should get a new car too, and so on. So maybe that will sustain them for a while in the US. And then, of course, there's difference in other markets too. But it's really going to be interesting to see the demand for the Model 3 in the next few months, because there's this happening in the US, the end of the federal tax credit. Then you have the Netherlands that have a similar situation right now, which is why we're seeing a ton of orders, a ton of deliveries of Tesla in the Netherlands. I think they were at 5,000 units last month, and they're probably going to beat that this month. So for a relatively small market like the Netherlands, it's very good. But it's also driven by tax credit for electric vehicles. I say tax credit. I think it's not necessarily a tax credit there, but their incentive for electric vehicle, the reduced tax rate for the cars, are going down next year. So they are not. They are stocking up on Tesla as well they can.
Right, and so also Tesla's got a Model Y coming. So I think there's probably going to be some retooling at Fremont, which could slow production down quite a bit, which may coincide with the tax credit going away and delivery slowing. But I think that's part and parcel. I think that's part of the refresh cycle and was planned for.
Okay. Yeah, that could make sense, because production on the Model Y looks like it could be starting as soon as like next month or two. So of course it's going to be a slow ramp up as usual. But yeah, Tesla could be trying to shift some resources at Fremont to Model Y production, which shouldn't have any problem, any demand problem for a while in the US too, despite of not having the federal tax credit. At least I think Tesla never released the reservation number for the Model Y, but also. It's more understanding, because the way they introduced the Model Y, it wasn't really reservation. It was pre-orders. And what I think it was 2,500. They were asking like the regular 2,500 to order, which is not 1,000 like the Model 3 was when the reservation started, or now the $100 with the Cybertruck, which is much easier to have those big, impressive numbers.
Yeah. And also, I think the way Tesla handled the Model 3 deliveries, this speaking from personal experience, I was kind of dismayed that, you know, I had waited out online, you know, like physically on a line to get the Model 3 reservation, and some, you know, schmuck who placed an order like a week before was getting his at the same time I was getting mine. So I was in, like, in a big hurry to
a week later. You mean?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't the same time, and there was some adherence to the, you know, the reservation line, but it felt like mostly Tesla was just getting them out the door and giving them to whoever.
Yeah, they were producing so much of them that they wanted to match the order with what people order. Not that they were very different options back when you took delivery, but still.
Yeah.
So what came out of the Model 3 reserve process basically is that doesn't matter that much unless you are in California, basically.
If you take your order in California, you're definitely getting it earlier.
Yeah, but if you are like on the East Coast, in the US, there's probably some more value to it. But like in Canada, for example, that doesn't change much. I mean, I think once they started delivering in Canada, they were already like delivering like hundreds at a time and everything. So it's not, that didn't have much of an impact. All right, that's like the Gigafactory 4 in Europe. There was some interesting news this week because the plans for the factory leaked. So I guess Tesla has to submit some plans with the government right now, but to get those approval needed to start construction at Gigafactory 4. And a part of those plans, they revealed that they are planning a production capacity of 500,000 Model Y and Model 3. Of course, Elon already revealed that the Model Y is going to be the focus at first at Gigafactory 4 in Europe. But if you look at the actual plans that leaked, we posted them on Electrek here. The actual design of the factory looks very similar to what the original design unveiled for Gigafactory 1 in Nevada. The same, I don't know what you would call that.
Like an octagon-ish.
Elongated octagon, really?
Yeah.
That elongated octagon. But again, like Gigafactory 1, they're also planning to build them in section and start with I mean, I wouldn't say it's exactly the same section as a Gigafactory one, but it's really the same principle. And the big question is now they're planning for the first phase to be half of that elongated octagon. It's not clear that 500,000 cars per year capacity is for that half, or if they expand to the other one, which I think makes more sense. I think it's going to be like 500,000 just for that, because we're talking about a giant building here. It looks like it's going to be almost like 2 kilometer long. So 2 kilometer long by, I don't know, maybe a 300 meter width. And Tesla is planning everything in there: battery manufacturing, drivetrain manufacturing, seat manufacturing, final assembly, paint shop. And they're talking about body construction, plastic press shop, foundry. And they're going to have their test track in Gigafactory 4 too, because they have a lot of land too. So
it's also nice that they have a railroad station going in there. So workers don't have to drive there. They can just take the train, because they're, you know, theoretically coming from all over the Berlin area. Obviously yeah. There's big parking lots as well, but
Because it's still like a 40 minute to an hour drive, I think, for from Berlin itself, from the center of Berlin.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's a, I don't know if you hear this, but there's a dog outside.
I did hear the dog.
Yeah, he's annoying. So weird, it's so calm here. Never hear a dog whatsoever. Now doing a podcast.
On the podcast, everything goes wrong. There's a dog.
All right, moving on. Yeah, that was one that we've been waiting for a while, the premium connectivity features. Tesla, this last weekend, started, well, didn't start charging for it, but they really fleshed out the entire program. So we knew that Tesla has been looking to charge for all the features inside the car that use the internet more extensively than just the regular connection. We're talking about things like satellite view maps, live traffic visualization, in-car streaming, music, media, internet browser, and over-the-air software updates. So, of course, over-the-air software update is a critical one, but you can still get them to Wi-Fi. So, I mean, if we go back here, like we go back to, I have a 2012. Tesla at all. And even back then, people were sort of surprised that Tesla included the an internet connection on the car without charging a per month fee, which is the standard in the industry, like the OnStar and like for GM and so on. So at first, Tesla said, well, they didn't say anything really on when they're going to change their policies for the internet connection. But eventually, like years later, they said, all right, you're going to have 4 years included with the car, and then we're going to change to a paid plan. Of course, those 4 years came and went, and Tesla never changed anything until last year, when they finally started talking about this premium connectivity thing. But they grandfathered in all the cars before that. So that was all cars delivered, ordered before June 30th, 2018. So if you ordered your car before that, you're safe. After that, though, you will have to pay a fee at some point. And what happened this weekend is that a lot of people started receiving an email from Tesla that they are getting a 30-day trial of premium connectivity. So if you didn't have access to premium connectivity, you have access now for 30 days, and then you're going to have to pay. And now we know that we have to pay $10 a month. And so I've seen most people getting that 30-day trial thing being standard range Model 3 vehicles, which they didn't have the features, the premium connectivity features to start with. So now they're getting it to that trial, sort of a way to entice them to buy that $10 fee per month. But a lot of other people that already have it, but they were having, so all the non-standard range people, basically, non-standard range and standard range plus, they did get the connectivity features, but now Tesla is talking about a year free trial on it. So a year starting when you bought the car, basically. So presumably you will get that same email a year from the time you bought your car, which technically could be could be now, because that was June 2018. We're past June 2019 now, so I think a lot of people are going to start getting those emails and have to make a decision. I don't know about you. Do you think it's worth it for $10 a month, those features?
I mean, I guess it depends. If you have a, you know, if you have a MiFi or a phone with a, you know, full internet, I mean, you could always just share your phone's broad internet and do live streaming and the music and karaoke and internet browser. And you know, you get the navigation included. Mm-hmm. So my, I don't know. I was thinking about, I don't have to do either one of those yet. I'm sure that'll come up for me, but.
No, I think you're safe. You took the RIA before June 2018.
Oh, and the Model 3?
Yeah. Okay. And Model X is was used, so.
Yeah, I don't know. It would be a tough decision for me. I mean, $10 a month isn't the end of the world, but I already spend like another, you know, $10 a month on my Apple Watch. So like I have all these devices that I'm spending another $10 a month on. I don't know.
Why do you pay $10 a month on the Apple Watch? Do you have cellular connection on it?
Well, I do have cellular connection on it.
What's the use of that?
It's, well, you know, when you're skiing or snowboarding, it's kind of nice not to have your phone with you. Anyway, you know, it's probably not worth it. I don't know. I mean, I almost always have a phone with me. You can just share that. As long as it is sharing was as easy as it is with, you know, other like computers, as long as.
Have you ever tried it on the Model 3?
Sharing my internet connection?
Yeah.
No. And the reason is because the Model 3's internet connection is always better than my phone's.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they have, it's a car. So you have huge amounts of power going into the antenna, and then you can have way bigger antennas. So I don't know. That's kind of a thing. Like, I wonder if you could just.
Yeah. We need to try it. Cause I've been hearing things that like, there's some issues because Tesla sort of like used to disable the Wi-Fi when the car is working, when the car is driving.
Oh yeah. So you would have to do like, so that's a good question, because you would still have the free navigation. So the navigation would be using, the internet connection.
The most important thing, but I do use live traffic visualization a lot.
Right.
So I do use, I always keep my map on satellite view.
Right.
Oh, it's more demanding bandwidth wise. I don't think that's I probably could go away with that. Then the video streaming, karaoke, music streaming, internet streaming, browser, that's all, that's all Wi-Fi anyway. Like you're going to primarily use it on Wi-Fi when you're stopped. Maybe not the music streaming, of course, music streaming.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess at $10 a month, it seems like not that big a deal, especially for Tesla owners. I think a lot of people will just pay it.
All right. I did do a poll on Electrek. 12,000 people participated in it. 56% said yes, they plan on purchasing it. 23% said no, and another 20% is not sure just yet. So looks like Tesla is going to get a good take rate on this feature.
Yeah, under 20 a year.
Come here.
$120 a year they'll make from it.
Yeah, 120 from. Like at this point, it's got to be already hundreds of thousands of people that are subject to it, at least.
Right.
A lot of people have been talking about like this is going to be like a new revenue stream for Tesla and everything. I mean, I don't think they are charging a lot for it. At $10 a month, I think it's really just covering their costs, because they know that they have to have an internet connection in their cars. It has to be included because of the upload, really. So you have the download speed. That's all download you want. That the feature they're listing here, but Tesla needs the upload speed too, because they want to send you to send back their data from the autopilot cameras and whatnot. So Tesla needs that internet connection. It's just making a little difference of their cost here, that $10 a month. I don't think that's going to be like a big Tesla revenue stream here.
I mean, eventually they could start using the Starlink.
People have been saying that forever, but you need a Starlink antenna on the car. It's going to be like relatively big. It's not going to be like a phone or something. All right.
Yeah, a nice bundle would be nice. If you like a Spotify membership, Netflix, all that stuff, that might make more sense.
Oh yeah, they could build out the. Why it took so long, in my opinion, is just the payment process. Like Tesla is just not used to having like this monthly thing,
right?
Software thing. So now I think they figured that out. Now it works through the car and through their website, like everything else. So now that they have that out, they could certainly tweak it and tune it to have different features in it and have like a super premium version of whatever connectivity version. But yeah, another Tesla software update this week. Our good friend Green, the Tesla hacker, we has access to root access to hardware 3.0 computer Tesla with Autopilot, has been digging into the latest software update, and he saw a bunch of 3D assets for stoplights and 3D assets for a bunch of different type of traffic lights. All right, so ooh, big whoop, right? Why this is interesting, it's in the context of Tesla supposedly enabling, at least to the early access owner, sort of that autopilot city driving. How do we call it? They call it feature complete, but feature complete is the assemble of everything together. I mean, the new thing is really like some kind of autopilot for city driving, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's what, level 4? I don't think we can say that yet.
Well, that's how it's being presented, basically. Because what I like to say autopilot is like, because autopilot is still something that you need to pay attention for, you need to be ready, you need to keep your hands on the steering wheel. So I think Tesla wants to have something similar where you could activate it in different places with intersection, hence having traffic lights and stop sign. But though in this case particularly here, what it means is that the driving visualization will include intersections, and those stoplight and traffic lights. So you're going to see how autopilot interacts with those through the driving realization, which is, I always like to call it a confidence builder in autopilot. Like you see what autopilot see through the driving realization. But I mean, you should still like look at the road and not look at it that much. But yeah, it's a small step in that direction that's supposed to happen by the end of the year. But I think a lot of people are having some doubts, but if you remember back, that was earlier this year at the Autonomy Day, Tesla did release a new self-driving demo in a Model 3, and you could see new driving visualization in that already. I went back to make sure, but there weren't any stop sign and traffic lights in the driving visualization. But when you arrive at an intersection, you would see the intersection like visualized through the eye of the autopilot, which you don't see right now very well when you're writing attention on autopilot today. But it was a different one, but still not to the level of having traffic lights and stop signs. Still talking about Very Green, you also find out a bunch of new streaming video apps coming to what do you call it now? Tesla Theater? Is that it?
I guess. I mean, that's what it's labeled on the car.
Mm-hmm. The new entertainment hub, really, of the Tesla is building, which right now is what, YouTube, Netflix,
Hulu,
YouTube.
And then how-to videos for the how to put the car in neutral or whatever.
So now they're gonna add a Comedy Central app, a Crunchyroll, which is apparently an anime streaming app, HBO Go, HBO Now.
That's cool.
A bunch of Chinese one, Youku and Tencent, and I know, and the other one, iQIYI.
Not familiar, but
yeah,
sounds great.
Yeah. Twitch and Mixer, video game streaming.
Yeah, that'll be
and,
great.
For Monty Python, but Monty Python, we already saw it as an Easter egg. It was already there as an Easter.
Now, is that, I mean, is that a Monty Python channel on YouTube, or is it?
Yeah, if you clicked on it, it was linking to the Monty Python channel on YouTube.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, I think that's pretty cool. you know, HBO is obviously a big deal for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Are you using the theater at all? I find the gaming to be a huge game changer. Like whenever I have to, like, you know, for instance, we're coming home and my wife needs to jump out and grab some breakfast cereal for tomorrow or whatever, I'll load up a game. I'll play a game real quick. It totally changes the game. Like it's so much fun. Like I don't mind waiting in the car anymore. It's a totally different thing. And then like, this is the one time when, you know, having the Chevy Bolt makes, you know, it's like really frustrating when I have to wait in that car because there's like nothing to do. You know, obviously I'll pull out my phone or whatever.
Yeah. But. Yeah. That's generally what I do. I pull out my phone. So even though I don't use it, at least as much as you do, I do appreciate it. I do appreciate the thought behind it, the thought process of just like trying to make the car fun. So I do like that. But I look at it more in a way that Tesla is working towards self-driving. And once you do achieve it truly with at the level where you don't have to pay attention, which I think it's not nowhere near that yet, but maybe in a year or two or something, they will have like periods of time where you could not pay attention and be as soon as it's approved, regulatorily speaking, then I think you just free up a ton of time for entertainment, a time in the car, and that's when those apps I think become very valuable for Tesla owners.
I think when you have kids as well, and they're sitting in the car annoying you, it's more fun to just play a video game with them than, you know, having to,
you know, yeah, it's more engaging,
right? Stop fighting, guys.
Yeah. All right. Now, in a little bit more disappointing news, we got the EPE numbers this week for the Taycan, the Porsche Taycan. Only the turbo version, though. So we knew about the 4S, the turbo S so far, but the 4S is going to come a bit later next year. Sooner we should quicker get the turbo S. I thought turbo S would be the first one because like it's the high-end one. I thought Porsche would focus on delivering that first, but no, it's the turbo that got the EPE rating first, and 201 miles is what the EPA came to in their cycle test.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's not great. I mean, if you look at the efficiency here, it's 49 kilowatt hour needed to travel 100 miles.
So it's pretty much like a 2-to-1 ratio. So if you have 50 kilowatts of battery left, you can go 100 miles.
Yeah.
That
battery is 93.4 kilowatt hour.
Right.
So, I mean, if you compare it to the Tesla Model S, and I went with the Tesla Model S performance here, even though it's so it's the top of the line Model S, but it's not top of the line Porsche here, but it's still a turbo. So it's still, I hate that turbo thing that like, yeah. Why do you declassify it like that? But anyway, you get what I mean? If you compare it to the Model S performance, it gets 348 miles of range to Porsche 201. This is just a slightly bigger battery pack here at 100 kilowatt hour. It's not that much bigger here. It's all we're talking about.
Yeah, and the car is, I mean, the Tesla is a lot bigger. It's got
that too. Yeah.
It's a big, taller profile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like Tesla is a little bit optimistic in their EPA stuff. You know, particularly with if you get, you know, I have a Model X and the wheels or the turbines, they really don't get great mileage at all compared to regular ones. But even then, like I still get like way under what Tesla kind of expects you to get. With the Model 3, I originally, when it was a 310, I was getting 310. Like if it said I had, you know, 200 miles left, they would go down in 200 mile increments. So those were pretty accurate. I don't know. It just seems like, I don't know where that energy's going. Like, is it creating heat? Like, where do those kilowatt hours go? Do they have too much of a buffer on the top and bottom?
Yeah, we didn't get that information just yet. I mean, I would assume that there is a bigger one than Tesla for sure. Just how big, I don't know. It's heavier. It's on the heavier side for sure. The turbo, 5,000 pounds. So it's heavy for a car that size, but the CD is really strong, aerodynamic performance, 0.22. So yeah, I think the culprit here is a buffer, a bigger buffer. So what that tells you though is that there's hope that, like we've heard recently from Audi and from Jaguar, they both feel more comfortable with their battery packs now, with their thermal management system and everything, and they're starting to give you a little bit more access to that buffer of energy and making it smaller, so and the car more efficient as a whole. Kind of disappointing. And that's the turbo. Again, the Turbo S is going to be even worse in terms of efficiency, but the 4S should be the redeeming one. So technically the 4S with the 93 kilowatt hour battery pack should be the longest range version of the Taycan. So we'll see about that one when we get the numbers. But so far, I mean, they went from a WLTP of 280 miles to APA of 201 miles. So
yeah, and that again shows the discrepancy between the two things. And WLTP was actually a lot more conservative than that. What was NRDC? No.
NEDC.
NEDC, yeah. So, like, it just, I don't know. It just seems like there could be a one standard globally.
So here's another issue too. So the way I see it, then, because the Turbo S is supposed to be a little bit less efficient than the Turbo, it's gonna have to be advertised at less than 200 miles of range. That's not good. Kick in the guts. Like, it's gonna be hard. I mean, I to be fair, the people buying the Turbo S, which again is like $150,000+ car, they're not really buying it for the range that much, but they're buying it for like the performance. But still, I think it's gonna be hard.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they can do like an Audi or Jaguar and release some more of the buffer on the upper and lower side of the battery, and maybe they can eke up their way to 200. But
yeah, that'd be nice. And also, it'd be fair to mention that Porsche doesn't like the EPA rating; they think it's not accurate, and they did order like an independent testing of it, and that independent testing said that it was 275 miles of range I get on real world range. So I'd give them the benefit of the doubt, but normally the EPA, like most cars, they have some issues reaching the EPA unless like you're being careful. While others, like for a while the Bolt was very good for the EPA, like you could easily beat that. Some Tesla cars, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But normally we go by APA rating, not independent testing paid for by a company. But I would give them the benefit of the doubt and let us test it. But Porsche, again, Porsche is not letting us test the Taycan. So we're going to have to go by the EPA rating until we actually test the car.
Before we go any further, let me jump in with the EV Items sponsoring us again this week. We love EV Items. They're offering our readers and listeners 20% off of all their accessories with the code ELECTREK, ELECTREK. And this is a big and. You'll get a free Elon Musk air freshener with every purchase. Some of the deals you'll want to check out include a wireless Qi charger, inserts made for the Model 3 and the Model S and X consoles, which is nice if you want to charge wirelessly instead of plugging in every time. There's also a premium interior LED light upgrade kit for all Tesla models that makes it much brighter inside your Tesla at night. These are 6 times brighter than the stock lights and available in 1 or 4 bulb light kits or in a complete kit for Model S, Model X, and Model 3. And you'll also find a selection of other accessories like center console storage doors, floor mats, and much more. Head over to evitems.com and use code ELECTREK for 20% off. Thanks again, EV Items, for sponsoring this week.
Yes, thanks, EV Items. All right, the last news of the day is a pretty fun one, so get into it. If you guys have any questions you want us to answer, send them out now in the chat, and we'll do it after that post. But the world's first commercial electric seaplane takes flight. So we've been talking about a bunch of different electric planes here, which are just starting out. Electric flight is just starting out. And we've seen some trainer planes, all electric trainer planes. We've seen some prototype planes that are not meant to be commercial. It's just like testing the an electric powertrain inside an aircraft. This thing here has an actual is an actual commercial electric plane. It's a seaplane, so it's a like it's still a small plane here, but there it's in the format of a plane, which in this case here is called the Avalon Canada Beaver seaplane. It's used commercially for and especially for from these guys here that I call Arbor Air, which is a relatively big airline with 53 aircraft. So like it's not like anything like small, but they do have flights from seaport to seaport and just anywhere a seaplane can actually land. Really,
yeah, they, mostly around Vancouver, I think.
Yeah, yeah, all around BC. They are based in Richmond, and they go to like Whistlers and places like that. So it's for I mean just a few passenger max, but still.
Do you know if they land like on a lake near Whistler, or do they land on a runway at Whistler, or how does that work?
Yeah, I'm not sure
about that. That sounds like a pretty cool way to get to the ski slopes.
Yeah, you're gonna ask them for a test ride?
That did cross my mind just now.
Yeah, for people who don't know, Seth used to be a pilot. Or you still have your license? You don't.
Well, you never really lose your license as a pilot. I'm just not current. And my wife would rather I wait until the children are grown before getting back into the sky. So I'm going to wait a little bit longer.
All right. So Arbor Air, which is an airline company, an airline operator, really. They partner with Magnex. I'm not sure how to pronounce their name.
Yeah, Magnex.
Yeah, which is an aerospace company. So they do make aerospace powertrain, and they build out this 750 horsepower electric motor for the aircraft itself. So they retrofitted that Beaver seaplane with that electric motor, and they didn't release the battery packs number, which kind of bothered me. But what they did release is that it's a one ton. They did say one ton battery pack, which means 2,200 pounds. So I did some very back of the napkin math here, because there's been like this number around of 300 watt hour per kilogram. That would be like the minimum energy density for an aircraft, because of course, energy density of a battery pack is very important in aircraft because you're weight limited. You want to keep as much weight for your payload, so you want everything else to be lighter. So that goes against a battery pack, which is normally very dense. But 300 watt hour per kilogram, which is achievable with today's technology, that would give them a 300 kilowatt hour battery pack. But again, that's just my speculation based on them saying that their battery pack weighs 2,200 pounds.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other considerations. Like they want to be able to fly for like a half hour. That's their typical flight.
Yeah.
So I wonder if these things, like I wonder if they charge them, or I wonder if they just swap the batteries. If it's getting rid of a 300 kilowatt hour battery in a half an hour, that's putting out 600 kilowatts average over that half hour. That's a lot of power, but I guess, you know, you're getting a plane and a certain amount of passengers up in the air and, you know, across the harbor or something. So
they have to have like redundancy too, so they have like to keep some power for like if they plan to operate it for like half an hour, they need to have like an hour of power or something like that. If they can, for whatever reason.
I guess the good thing about that is, you know, if you do run out of power, the whole ocean is basically a emergency runway.
Yeah.
You don't want to land in big waves, obviously, with those things, but if you have to, you have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they call it the maiden flight, the first official test flight. Earlier this week, it was successful. The CEO of Arbor Air was the test pilot, and now they are just going full swing in their test program for the aircraft. And if it's successful, then they're gonna introduce it into their fleet, which they hope to eventually completely electrify, starting with that aircraft. And again, it's like a 53 plane fleet that they have there, so that it will have a great impact. And I think it's great because it's really, they probably have the business, the air travel business, the best suited for the start of electrification. Mm-hmm. Obviously, long term, you want to see a bigger aircraft being electrified and whatnot. But they already operate smarter aircraft, and they have shorter routes. So, like, they really like the perfect example to show that electrification, air transport electrification, really is possible.
Yeah, and they're going to save a ton of money, it sounds like, because the maintenance and the obviously fuel not being burned. It's going to save them a lot of money.
Yeah, definitely. So very exciting. We're going to keep, it's a new electric vehicle program that we're keeping an eye on. I mean, they are stacking up at Electrek, but exciting time for electric transport.
Yep.
And congrats to Arbor Air and Magnus for their successful maiden flight.
So we have some questions from the audience. Mm-hmm. Aaron Cintron says, should we expect the Cybertruck specs to be better, worse, or the same to what was stated during the debut?
I mean, normally I would say like better, because Tesla does normally find ways to improve on efficiency, which is their, of course, it's Tesla's bread and butter, with production vehicle instead of concept vehicle, because they do have strong engineering engineers to build the prototypes and to map out the plan, but they also have extremely good like manufacturing engineers and designer that streamline the process during manufacturing, and they do find improvements there. However, I find that the spec announced for the prototype were so good that
it's hard to believe.
Yeah, it's hard to believe already. So like,
especially the prices. The prices were so, especially for the battery size, seemed insane.
But there's a few interesting things if you look at it. You look at like the big jump between the dual motor version and the tri-motor version in terms of range. So what's happening there? What kind of battery pack jump they have difference there? Then what's the difference in battery pack between the 250 mile rear wheel drive versus the 300 mile dual motor? So Tesla didn't go deep in the specs really. So there's still going to be some surprises coming, I think.
Yeah, and it's going to be an exciting 2 years, because I feel like they're going to trickle new stuff out all the time, and the interest in it has been crazy already.
Yeah.
So he's got a follow up. He thinks they're optimistic, glass breaking. I think the glass is definitely going to get an upgrade, or at least the padding around the glass, if they expect it to be.
I think they're gonna have some issues actually claiming like a bulletproof vehicle thing. Like, it's when you claim that, like, you have to go through an extensive like testing process and everything. So maybe they will let that go. I wouldn't. Not that the car is not like, I think the body structure and the Tesla glass itself, I think they're a good product. I mean, we reported extensively of the people that Tesla has on the material fronts, like the material engineers that are developing those products. And we're talking about top of the food chain people here, the guy that invented Tesla glass, like he was involved in a bunch of projects at Apple and other companies to develop very advanced glass materials. So I don't think that's an issue itself. It's just like putting it all together. Is it worth really getting into like all the safety protocols that you need to have to claim to be bulletproof? I don't know. But it will certainly be interesting, because I've seen some bulletproof Tesla before, and like the windows, they don't move, and they're like this thick, and the doors are also like way heavier and everything. So if Tesla can like fix all those issues and still achieve that, that would be impressive on its own. But yeah. Like most people don't care about having a bulletproof car. Like, it's just,
yeah. I mean, some people probably don't want a glass that's bulletproof, so that if they roll over or whatever, they can get out by breaking it.
Yeah.
So moving on, Gary Evans says, or asks, when is Giga One expanding again? It has been a while since we've seen an expansion there.
Probably 2 years since a new section has been up.
Yeah. At this point. And it sounds like they're going to be adding more stuff there. So it's actually kind of surprising that they haven't started building more there.
Good news is that they've been adding solar panels on it. So that
we have seen some more solar panels. So in the energy part. The energy there is cleaner.
Yeah, it is. So I think obviously what's happening, why there's haven't been an expansion in so long, is because they've been focusing on increasing the efficiency of the plant. So having more production within the current sections of the plant, especially on the Panasonic side, we knew that they have been having issues to get to that 35 gigawatt hour of capacity. Apparently they are there now. They're like very close to it. So if they achieve that, then maybe yes, that would be time for an expansion. But on the same time, if Tesla is still able to produce like great numbers like they seem to be doing now, Gigafactory, which virtually hasn't seemed to be a bottleneck in a long time, I think maybe other sections would need different things. I mean, maybe another section for Tesla Semi production and things like that. That would be cool to see. I think that's a strong possibility right now.
Yeah, I mean, at least we know that they're not full, you know, the site isn't full yet, although they could theoretically keep going. And there's
room to grow.
A bunch of desert around there, yeah. All right. I think that's all the questions we have.
All right. Thanks a lot for listening, guys. Thanks a lot for watching on YouTube. Thanks a lot to EV Items for sponsoring us this week. And we're going to see you same place, same time next week. Hopefully on time next week without technical issues.
My bad this time.
All right. Ciao.